your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Thursday night, September 25th, 2025. As we record this new show, well, folks, it's time for last call in 2025. The Chicago White Sox are sputtering to the finish line. After starting 8-2 in the month of September, the White Sox are 1-11 since, as they got swept by the New York Yankees in the Bronx. Now they head to the nation's capital to take on the Washington Nationals for the final series of the season. So what's the play for? We take a look at the season milestones for some, while Michael A. Taylor has a financial reason to keep playing, but also celebrate the Birmingham Barons as they won back-to-back Southern League championships. Is this a sign that the White Sox player development efforts are improving? In the end, we'll take a look at the MLB postseason race as, holy crap, are things tight in the American League Central heading to the final weekend. Joining me are Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, gentlemen, and a huge thank you to all of our podcast listeners and Sox Machine subscribers for sticking with us all year long. Really appreciate as far as your support. We are sending James out to Washington, D.C. to cover the final three games of the regular season. That's impossible to do without your support. So again, huge thank you for being Sox Machine subscribers. But as I mentioned in the intro, James, the White Sox started 8-2 in September, and I was feeling good. I was feeling itchy. Maybe things are turning around.
Maybe too good, some people might suggest.
Lost 11 out of 12. So what do we make of this September slide for the Chicago White Sox? Have they just finally ran out of gas and we're seeing the effects of that?
Certainly on multiple fronts. How close are they to five runs a game by chance here? Are you up on that? You haven't checked the numbers recently?
I haven't checked. I haven't checked recently.
What do you feel like got you off your pace? I don't know. So obviously, like, losing Benintendi and, like, Tauchman is part of it. Like, those are certainly, like, Tauchman much more obviously, and I think Benintendi probably more underappreciated, like, having an average bat. You can slide it anywhere. You know, we're things that helped their offense be better than it is when you're kind of doing more like who's our best, who played well in AAA type of filling out the lineups at this point of the year. That they're doing in their stead. You certainly saw kind of like they looked really great when Colson Montgomery was probably at the peak of like his power production. And then we saw him go through a bit of a valley. He's been a little bit better of recent. Obviously had a, you know, at least with the bat, had a pretty good series in the Bronx just now. So that's trending back up a little bit, but you're seeing maybe Edgar Caro and even Kyle Teal a little bit too, at least from like what his peak was when they were really looking great and like that the whole winning streak was going on, probably come down a little bit. But I think the when you talk about like out of gas in a way where it's like majorly come through and there's not really a remedy, you can see them doing this year rather than like the ups and downs of rookies. I think you're seeing that with the pitching a little bit now, like as far as like what the rotation was and certainly like what's a given going forward. One, like Cannon and Burke are way more like kind of up in the air, both in how they're being used and what their status is going forward. Like you're not getting across these like stray good outings from them. One, Cannon because he's going up and down, and Burke because he's kind of more just been working for choppy innings where you see it a little bit, but not really being pushed in usage wise or like really having the, you know, consistency of performance where you get some of those, you know, good quality outings that would save them from getting swept in a series or put them in position for a comeback. And I think you're seeing some more of the valleys alongside the peaks with the young offense, but also just the rotation. It's kind of end of the year in a fair bit of flux. I really don't think you can project much more like the two starters returning safely. Like certainly Burke and Cannon probably have a chance for that. Looks better for Burke than Cannon right now. And there's plenty of internal options who are going to be filtered in, either have a shot in spring or be filtered in over the course of next season. But the flux you're kind of going the offseason where they're committing openly to like, we need to sign a starter or two veteran wise is kind of reflective of how things have dissipated a little bit in the final 6 to 8 weeks for the rotation. Regularly giving them a shot. And then the bullpen is just isn't as talented enough to sustain kind of the hot run they had a bit earlier too.
Yeah. In October, we'll be doing the position player recaps of the 2025 season. When we get to both the starting pitchers and the bullpen, that's going to be a pretty long conversation for both. And it's going to have to be a focus, podcast listeners, on your upcoming offseason plan projects. I mean, everyone that's going to do one, even though we felt so good about where the White Sox pitching was, maybe in the first half of the season, it does feel like you have very few pitchers you want to keep in either the starting rotation or the bullpen going into 2026 if you have the mindset of trying to win more games next season. But Jim, what do you make of this slide in September for the White Sox losing 11 of their last 12 games?
Yeah, it's the elimination of decent players. You kind of understand the concept of replacement level when you watch this lineup in the second half of September be rolled out when you don't have Benintendi there, when you don't have Talkman there, and you have like Dominic Fletcher coming up and signing Derek Hill to give them 62 different players in the White Sox.
Totally
going to
forget about that, and I'm going to get that Ron the Sporacle.
Yep, another guy to file away. It's just thin. It's unfortunate for you that the resembling steak dinner form on your behalf, like after they won that bet for Beef Loaf, like now that they got the message too late, they need to be playing like this a lot earlier for you to have a chance. I think it's, my hope was that they would finish the season strong enough to force Chris Getz to defend like a quiet offseason, a quiet winter, like a less ambitious path. And now I think you're seeing just that same habit that White Sox front offices have had like in recent years of just, we got to find a way to patch six different holes with like $20 million or something like that. And it doesn't make for the most scintillating offseason fodder. I was really hoping that you'd see like a stronger finish. You hope that perhaps, going into the winter, the younger hitters that are struggling, the pitchers that are struggling, they go into the off season with something to work with, and they already know what the book is and can attack it over the winter and come into the spring with a way to solve it versus like getting ambushed with it in April and May and then having the disappointment of like, oh, I thought these guys were good. I think that's a positive way to spin it, is they're getting their education earlier, but it is disappointing.
And for the White Sox, after getting swept by the New York Yankees, their final series of the 2025 season, they are heading to Washington, D.C. The Nationals, not much better. They are 65-94 this year. They're last place in the National League East. They won their last game, but they have lost 7 of their last 10. They are 3-7 in their last 10. At home this year, the Nationals are 31-47. Your pitching problems for this series, Friday night. This is the final night game for the White Sox in 2025. First pitch is at 5:45 p.m. Central Time. Yoenis Gomez will take on Cade Cavalli for the Nationals on Saturday afternoon, 3:05 p.m. Central Time. Sean Burke will take the ball against Jake Irvin. And then on Sunday, neither the White Sox or the Nationals know who they're going to be throwing out there. Everyone is starting at the same time. 2:05 p.m. Central Time is the first pitch. And I guess that's a good place to start, James, because looking at the rotation, it could be Shane Smith. Does it make sense to have Shane Smith pitch on the final game of the regular season, especially with how well he threw against the Yankees in the Bronx?
The argument for it is like, you expand his innings base if he's feeling good. It just gives him a little bit more room to lengthen out even more next season. I would ration the hazard of guess that if they didn't already list them there, they don't plan on changing their mind on revving up his season for the final game. I don't know what the plan is, but like something deep inside me just thinks it's going to involve some measure of Tyler Alexander because it always does. But I think they're kind of on the same wavelength as you. He finished strong. His fastball was popping. He's probably got more innings on this season than I thought he was going to be able to get, especially with the way they were talking about him. But that magic sprained ankle in Pittsburgh on the All-Star break really kind of saved him from the shutdown the team is going with. I think they probably are pretty look at 140 and are pretty happy with that. We'll mention Owen White alongside Cannon when they're talking about depth arms to fill out the final week. So that sounds like somebody who could pitch in the last game of the 2025 season, if I've ever heard one.
Has Owen White pitched for the White Sox this year?
On one hand, that's yes, obviously he has, but I don't think that's like a probably beyond the pale White Sox fan reaction. He's made multiple appearances on the season, but it's never too late to make a first impression, perhaps.
I guess so, because I don't remember him pitching for the White Sox this season. So it could be a bullpen day for the White Sox in the final regular season game of the 2025 season. So what's the play for the Chicago White Sox? Well, when you take a look at some of the player milestones heading into the final weekend, Colson Montgomery right now is sitting with 19 home runs, so he needs one more home run to get to 20. Edgar Caro's got 96 hits. He's four away from 100 hits. Lenin Sosa needs two more doubles to get to 20. If he does that, he hit 20 doubles and 20 or more home runs this season. Brooks Baldwin needs one more home run to reach 10. And here is the fun one. And I love going to SpotTrac, Jim, and trying to find all these incentives. And the one that I find that's still alive is Michael A. Taylor. So Michael A. Taylor has already earned all of his bonuses for games played. This may be a shocker to you, podcast listener, but Michael A. Taylor's played 130 games this year for the White Sox. So he already got his 50, 75, 100, 125 game bonus. He got 25,000 for the 50 and 75 game mark. He got 50,000 for the 100 and 125 game mark. But then plate appearances. He gets $25,000 when he reached his 100th, 150th, 200th, 250th, and 300th. He needs to get to 325 plate appearances to earn another $25,000. Michael A. Taylor is at 321 plate appearances, Jim. So how cheap do the White Sox get this weekend? Do they bench Michael A. Taylor for the weekend, or does he get another
You just hit a
$25,000?
homer. He just hit a homer. Bud Black would have him line up
Absolutely.
on Friday. I wonder if like Michael A. Taylor is like 131 games is too much for me. Like that's too much me. You shouldn't, as a bench player, you probably shouldn't be like earning the high end of your incentive scale. That probably means something went wrong or something went incredibly right. And in this case, like Taylor's. He's about performing as expected offensively. So just a lot has been required of him. Between Robert getting hurt and the injuries elsewhere in the outfield, probably too much. But yeah, I don't see anybody getting in his way. Usually the White Sox are pretty good about these things. They're not like the Pirates. They're not giving him, was the Rowdy Tellez
Oh,
treatments of. I think Andrew Heaney got his barely. Rowdy Tellez did not. So I don't think they'll give him that treatment. And he's been playing decently aside from the throw that he had at the end of Tuesday's game. So yeah, I don't see why not. I don't see Derek Hill getting in his way, although he made a very nice play. So yeah, let's say he does. I have a couple numbers I'm looking at if
yeah,
you
let's
want
fire
my
away. What are you looking at, Jim, for this weekend?
like round numbers with the OPSs and sluggings and whatnot. You have Kyle Teal at 797 OPS, so you'd like to see him get to 800. Colson got his OBP above 300. That's probably something you want to see just for like the Keith Laws of the world who are skeptical of him, being a hit tool, having enough of a hit tool to get on base to support the slug to make him a threat. Like, having an OBP start with a three is something that I think is just something that grabs you. On a superficial level, as you start to dig in on him, Edgar Caro currently a 699 OPS, so we'd like to see him start with a seven there. Otherwise, it's been a fine season for him. Then, like Miguel Vargas, 396 slugging, wouldn't hate him to get 400 just because, like, as a corner infielder who is not, you know, hitting 232, like, gotta be a bit more pop than that. I mean, like, he is the king of like threatening 340-foot flyouts. Like, a lot of balls leave his bat, and you think like, oh, that's something, and then it just like kind of dies short of the warning track, or Cody Bellinger flags it down when it's actually got the exit velocity he needs. So, questions about his profile, and the White Sox seem like they're asking questions as well, or at least, you know, making sure that he knows like that, you know, he still has a step to go before he's a fixture. So, wouldn't hurt him to have like a as a third baseman, first baseman, have a slugging percentage that starts at the four.
No, I like this. Anything that you're looking towards or forward to when you get to DC and join the White Sox for the final series of the regular season, James?
No.
Ask and
I
answer.
mean, like, as far as round numbers, it seems like it's picking up because he had a rough night, but like a Meade home run, something kind of like that looks like the power potential. Obviously, like the way they talked about him from the jump was like a little bit similar to Vargas in the sense that they thought like probably the bigger fix or change in him would have to come in the offseason, and it'd be more about like how he looks next spring. But a right-handed, you know, power hitting prospect, or at least supposed to have above average raw power. Seems like getting him to pull the ball, getting him on time for fastballs is probably a big thing for him. It'd be nice to see him get something in the air pull side with authority once to kind of see what it's supposed to look like before the season runs out. I don't know what kind of numbers we can really get my drop to. Like it's been a fine like fighting his like kind of post hot start swoon to a draw a little bit with the way he's finished the season. Wanted Davis Martin to get under four ERA for the season. That did not happen on Thursday night. So I don't like they have Burke could get it, but it only like would further I feel like drive home like the weirdness of his season if he was somehow got his way in there after kind of losing his role. But at 429, he'd probably have to throw something around 20 shutout innings. Which yeah, I'd love to see that in Washington. So yeah, I don't have it. I would note that like when Taylor got signed, I think there was a lot of like it happened in like early spring training, and it was like they're going to trade Robert. Like this is preparing for that because I think the favorite fan thing to do is to hope that the big like move is being done in reverse, where the little parts to enable it are being done first and leak out publicly before the huge move. So it's funny that they, when I reached out to the White Sox, they were like, no, just need depth, you know, take Robert off his feet. And they wind up not trading Robert, not only not in the spring, but all year. And Mike Leigh Taylor is probably going to play like 133 games this season, even with Luis Robert not here all season. That's pretty funny. Reminds me of the Blake Sable conspiracy theories, what that was going to lead to. So yeah, I mostly reflecting on the end of the season of what weird ideas that we had in spring are going to turn up, and like we're going to laugh at how silly it was. Every time I see Tyler Gilbert, I remember like how much time we spent to like the idea that he might start at the start of the season, and now he's like, you know, literally as close as you can to the rules of being used as a loogie guy all the time. That's great stuff. Like when Cam
Mike Fastow threw
Mike
100
Vassell throwing a
innings.
100 innings,
That's
but at the same time, like when
yeah.
Cam Boozer comes in for like garbage time, when like at the start of the season, it was like, all right, we know what the pen's gonna be, but we got Kleb and we got Boozer at the end of the pen. So like those are very trusted options. Like, oh, as was said later in the season, my coach is like, you kind of spend the first month figuring out what you have bullpen wise. You kind of make plans and God's laughs a little bit there. So moments like that are what I'm pursuing in the final series of the season.
I think my draft's got a shot of reaching two war on Fangraphs.
Okay.
Last I checked, Montgomery and Teal are both at two war. So the White Sox could have three position players with two war this
I don't,
season.
it's hard to know what to say to a guy to encourage him to get that last milestone of
Yeah,
war.
right?
Sit.
Throw some good range out there for your UZR, buddy.
Oh, well, we'll see on how the final weekend goes for the White Sox, and we'll recap the final three games of the 2025 season on our next podcast episode, which will be Sunday night that we record. That will be Jim and I, as James will be making his way back home from Washington, D.C. and the off-season podcast start coming your way as we break down the position groups and start generating what I hope with the goal of being a realistic shopping list that we can give to the White Sox for them to go out and try to tackle this offseason. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the previous podcast at Podcast Row during the White Sox home season finale for Fan Appreciation Day, White Sox Director of Player Personnel Gene Watson joined me on that podcast, and he broke down on how the White Sox are tackling this offseason. They're already having their meetings and they're already having their discussions and they're reporting on the upcoming free agents. So it was really insightful stuff from Gene Watson. I highly recommend taking a listen to it. Gives you an idea of how the White Sox will be handling this upcoming offseason. But the White Sox did get some good news, or at least from Birmingham, Alabama. The Barons have won back-to-back Southern League championships. They beat the Montgomery Biscuits in 3 games. They won game 2, and game 3 was delayed and pushed back an extra day, but the Barons were able to hold on against the Biscuits. So, Jim, back-to-back Southern League championships. I mean, we've been podcasting for so long that we used to joke about Birmingham because they could never have a winning season after winning the Southern League championship back in, 2013 when Tim Anderson was playing shortstop for the Barons. And now they've won back-to-back championships. Is this a sign that the White Sox player development efforts are improving?
It's tough to know. Like, it's surprising how uncertain this championship is as opposed to the last one. Like, the last one felt very typical of like a development success story because they got into the postseason because they won the first half title. That first half team had Edgar Caro and Tim Elko and Brooks Baldwin, who was really hot. Brian Ramos. They had Drew Thorpe and Kai Bush, all of these guys getting to the majors later that year, except for Elko, but then Elko made it this year. So you had like a lot of guys taking, big steps in that direction, using Birmingham as a launching pad to go up the ladder. You had like Noah Schultz doing what he needed to do 4 innings at a time. So that felt very much like a, yes, this is a farm system on the right track. We're sending guys upwards and we're still finding ways to win. This season, a different story. You had guys spending the entire year in Birmingham. Like Birmingham sent, who they sent? They sent Grant Taylor directly to the bullpen. Like, they sent Grant Taylor up, but kind of in the less impressive way. Like he was a starter and then they moved him to the bullpen and then they sent him up. Wickelman Gonzalez made his way up to the majors, but kind of in a way where, he's already on the 40-man roster, so they may as well see him. Jacob Gonzalez got promoted, Noah Schultz got promoted, but not when they were peaking at AA. They were kind of having iffy seasons, and then it just became a case of let's test our first round picks, and neither of them impressed for various reasons in Charlotte. So like you're not seeing like the sign that like players are getting better at Birmingham in a way that helps the major league team. This feels more like a case of like they cracked the Southern League code. Like they in a low run scoring environment, they had pitchers who like threw nothing but strikes, like Shane Murphy, although Murphy did get promoted to Charlotte at the end of the year and fared okay, but like Jake Polish and Riley Gowans and Tyler Schweitzer in bulk appearances. Like, not sure if any of those guys are going to be cracking a major league rotation. Like Tanner McDougal showed at the end of the year, he could be on that trajectory. Like, it almost seems like the hope is that this team is the 2024 team in reverse, in that, at the end of the year, Hagen Smith was pitching better. They got Braden Montgomery, although he was hurt for the postseason. Sam Antonacci, you have some guys who are, performed well at Birmingham and could be on that promotion to Charlotte trajectory next year. And maybe look at this team, 3 months or 3 baseball months from now and say like, oh, that was a good team at the end of the year. Look at what they're doing in Charlotte or Chicago. But right now you're not seeing that. And so it does feel more of a case where, you're almost like thinking about Brooks Baldwin or like Nick Madrigal in terms of like, we got these high motor players who are just wreaking havoc against AA defenses and don't strike out against the power arms. And so they're able to put the ball in play and steal enough bases to score 3 or 4 runs a game. And because our pitchers throw strikes, that's all you need to do in these ballparks. A hat tip to Guillermo Quiroz for like a, a good job managing the team and getting the most he possibly could out of that formula. I just don't know in terms of like Chris Getz crowing about it over the winter and saying like this is the sign of better days ahead. I'm not sure that this championship has what last year's championship had as a selling point.
Got it. Well, it's still a success for Birmingham. So congrats to the Barons,
Certainly,
but
yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know from this roster that won the championship, maybe outside of Tanner McDougal, which James has written about. The White Sox have to protect him, so he's going to be added to the 40-man roster before the winter meeting so the White Sox don't lose him in the MLB Rule 5 draft. I think we're going to see Hagen Smith sooner than later. I think what we saw from Smith in September right now is just this roller coaster. No one can hit him. No one can hit Hagen Smith. He just walks the world. Like 17 innings in his last four outings, 17 innings allowed 16 walks.
Yeah, it was funny. Like the championship game was kind of a perfect summary of a season in that through four scoreless innings, pretty easy innings, and then like when it's time to put the pedal to the metal and get this game in before the rains come, two walks on like eight or nine pitches total, and then gives up a hit, and then the rains come and the game gets pushed back into Thursday. When like a typical Smith inning of what he'd been doing earlier that night probably would have ended the game, and they would have been able to celebrate in a very awkward fashion out of camera view. So I guess that's the good news is like they do have a good photo of celebrating on the field when
Yeah.
everybody's playing and everything like that versus realizing in the dugout they've been informed that the game's called and now they have to try to summon the enthusiasm after being very tired at like 10 at night when everybody's left the building.
Right. Well, they're
Yeah, I
kids.
don't know if that would
They'll
have been a
stay up
huge
until
issue for
two,
them.
three in the morning.
But in terms of like just
Yeah.
like going from like looking at scrolling through their phones, like, hey, you guys won. Oh, what do
I
we
mean, to
do?
your point about like the
Yeah.
roster, like when they won, I saw like a GIF being posted of like Nishida like celebrating. I was like, oh wait, that's from last year. That you can't fool me. That's I've already seen that. Like,
Yeah, like Nishida was there last year, like another full year of Wilfred Veras, another full a full year of DJ Gladney, a full year of Gowans there. Like a lot of guys spent the entire year. William
Freeman
Bedoya.
and Baelish both pitching when they like had time, big league time this season, stands out a bit. Addison Coffey started the year in AAA. He had a scoreless inning as part of this. Like, it's certainly positive. It's an indicator. I think like large scale indicators are like all your affiliates being competitive or kind of seen, obviously seen this year after year, but seeing it turn over a bit more would probably stand out. Like, it's not negative, but it's just like it's not like this all-encompassing positive indicator. I feel like just the top of their lineup being like Nishida, Bergoglio, and Antenacci. I think Bergoglio is probably like a fielder who's a bit better than that group that stands out. But you could potentially see all those three of those guys like fighting for the same roster spot in Chicago, and they're like the top three in the order there. Like, it kind of reflects like this roster would just be repeated two levels up. It's kind of there's a bit more narrowing of it that's going to happen that obviously hasn't happened yet. That doesn't have to because they're in the Southern League.
Well, again, though, congrats to the Birmingham Barons. It is a cool feat to win back-to-back Southern League championships. Now we get to talk about them trying to three-peat in 2026. Now, before we move over to Major League Baseball, one other item is that Baseball America gave their Minor League Player of the Year awards to each of the organizations. And I know, James, that you help out our friends over at Baseball America with their minor league coverage of the Chicago White Sox. And for those that subscribe to the YouTube channel for us at youtube.com/SoxMachine, or if you follow us on social media, you're going to see more video clips. There's already one out there about Noah Schultz and James asking Schultz what he was most proud of in 2025, and Schultz talking about his development of his changeup. So there'll be a lot more video content coming up regarding Noah Schultz and Caleb Bonnemer on all our social media feeds and our YouTube channel. But James Bonnemer gets the honor. He is the Chicago White Sox Minor League Player of the Year, according to Baseball America. Why Bonnemer? Why does he get that honor?
So there's a couple like things that go into the criteria for this. Is that one, we normally want it to be a top prospect in the organization. So that would, make Bonnemer an easy pick over, say, Shane Murphy, who, as far as like minor league production is up there as anybody, but we usually want this to be an honor we bestow to like a prospect that we're already kind of want the public to know, like this is someone relevant for the White Sox future in a major way. Two is that we usually want it to be someone who's finishing the minor leagues. There'd be people who debut maybe at the very end of the season, like a final, like a September call-up situation. But someone like Colson Montgomery, even if he had like more of a monster start to his year, whose season is really more about like what they did in the majors, and that's what's more exciting about them, and you really think of them as a major leaguer more than a prospect going forward. You don't really want to have those people. So that gave Edgar Caro an edge over, who am I trying to think of next? Over everyone, because last year was a hellscape. But you get that point. You want someone who's going to start next season in the minors, primarily. So, and then you start thinking about like degree of difficulty. So it's really like I think I at least brought up Opper and Tanner McDougal, and maybe their issues a little bit, like one that like McDougal, is an ERA in the threes. It's like his stuff clearly looks good, but it wasn't necessarily like this insane like minor league run prevention that attracts attention. And then Opper had a lot of inning restrictions where I don't think he really cracked 100. I want to double check, but like not really close to like a full season of work compared to the position guys. So it becomes kind of a debate between Bonnemer and Brady Montgomery. And while it was Brady Montgomery's pro debut, this is a someone who basically played SEC baseball coming in and making his way to double A and being good, very good even, but maybe not like MVP of the league. That's Bonnemer achieved. And then Bonnemer's just starting from like a such lower place of the previous level of baseball that he had played, where not only is it high school, but cold weather, where it's, I was doing demographic studies for Fangraphs over this past month, trying to like use all our resources. But like Michigan is like very low for like the level, like density of players it produces, on top of just not being super populous. I want to say like Michigan and Ohio are the only like two top like 10 populous states that are like way out for as far as production for concentration. I'm fudging my numbers, but like
Huh.
Michigan's not a good baseball state is what I'm trying to say.
Ohio
So they
surprises
view,
me.
I have the spreadsheet, I can pull it up. But the point was like Bonnemer coming out from, playing in a poor baseball state to doing really well in high A or low A, getting his way up to high A, was viewed as kind of the bigger jump in comparable performances. And I think his relative league numbers were a little bit stronger than Montgomery's as well. And so that was like, all right, this is Bonnemer was like already, or sorry, Montgomery was at the end of like top 100 prospect list preseason based on like his collegiate track record alone, because he didn't play any pro ball. And he kind of settled more firmly into top 50s, which just like safely in top 100. Whereas Bonnemer went from like maybe the few people who saw him in Bridge League or really loved him in the draft were like, this is a guy to watch, to now he's like on every top 100 list. So I think that's probably the bigger jump going forward as far as the two of them made. And to double back on our point, if Birmingham is winning a third straight year, it will probably be like a Caleb Bonnemer front of group by the end that you can actually like feel really excited about. I kind of think like a really good Opera year doesn't see him ending the year in double A unless he got hurt or missed some time in some way. Maybe Aldrin Batista is like the really good prospect at the start of like the double A rotation if they're doing good again. But like I think Bonnemer is in position to kind of be a focus of future excitement without major league expectation next season in a way that I think he could be like the top prospect that people are really focused on on a paradigm that's not just when does he get here, which is probably going to be the Brayden Montgomery discussion from the first week that the White Sox get like unsatisfactory right field play. I think that the drum is going to be beating for Brayden in some way.
That is true. That is true. Jim, obviously with the minor keys every day on Sox Machine, recapping all the action of the minor leagues. Do you like the choice of Caleb Bonnemer being the White Sox minor league player of the year?
Terrible. They should fire the guy who suggested it, overhaul the system. No, it's as good as anybody. Like, I didn't rank Bonnemer in my top 10 just because, like, I didn't know what to think of him and I couldn't give him an honest ranking. It would be entirely off what other people had written and even seen, like, as James mentioned, the Bridge League, like, their positive reports, but I never know what to make of that. Like, everybody looks good in Arizona. You never hear anybody's like, oh, he's crap in the bed. In Arizona, it's always like, oh, he's working on a new pitch or he's trying a new stance. Like, there's always a waving away from the struggles and like overpraise of any progress. And so, like, I just, because we only ranked the top 10, like, I just felt comfortable, like, yeah, he could be 11th. Who knows? Like, yeah, I'll wait to see him and then develop a number. And like, yeah, he just basically did as much as he possibly could. Like, if anything, maybe just like a probably, stretched too thin at shortstop, but everybody kind of knows that anyway, and there's gonna be shortstops coming up that don't make it a problem if he's not the one playing shortstop. So like, that's fine. Otherwise, like, yeah, he nailed the assignment as it was presented to him. And yeah, if he's in Birmingham, it'll be him in like a fourth year of Wilfred Veris leading the charge. Experience and precociousness to drive the Barons to the top.
I should note, like, he's kind of like a weird swing guy. Like, it looks the what he does to load himself up is going to look stiffer and less fluid than it's just like a lot smaller than what you're going to see typical hitters were. So there's just a little bit of scouting level of is that thing going to work to him like hitting in pro ball that isn't really like disproven until he finally actually does it. So I think that was probably a little level of like, oh yeah, it totally works. Sort of reaction that at least I was hearing from scouts who would watch him on video and then watch him on person and then watch him on video again and kind of parse for details is like, all right, he's it looks funky, but he's doing a bit more to make it work, and clearly it's working because look at the results.
Yeah, for Veras, Jim, we're going to have to take a look at the Birmingham Barons club records and see what he is challenging for. Jordan Dank still leads the Charlotte Knights. He's the all-time hit leader for the
Yeah,
Charlotte
he's the king of
Knights.
Charlotte.
Yeah.
Jason Dubois is top five.
But again, congrats to the Birmingham Barons and congrats to Caleb Bonnemer for being selected by Baseball America as the Chicago White Sox Minor League Player of the Year, backed up by our very own James Fegan. Now we take a look around Major League Baseball. And a month ago, we did not think that this type of weekend was possible. But man, has this week been a lot of fun to not watch White Sox baseball, but turn on the MLB.TV app on your computer, your smartphone, your video game consoles, and watch MLB's Big Inning. I know even ESPN has been having its own kind of red zone channel for Major League Baseball this week because the baseball's been good, Jim, to borrow one of your phrases. In the American League, this is where all the drama is. Toronto and New York in the American League East, Detroit, and I don't know what type of devil magic or deal they made with the devil, but the Cleveland Guardians caught the Detroit Tigers. Both races tied going into the final weekend of the regular season. And of course, we'll start with the American League Central. I asked you a number of times, Jim, would anyone fathomably make a run at Detroit? And I was with you. It was just hard to be confident with anyone. But Cleveland is just not allowing any runs this month. Before Thursday's game, they were only allowing 2.4 runs per game in the month of September, and that's what's fueled this 18 wins so far in this month. And for them to be able to catch Detroit and have the tiebreaker over Detroit, I just feel like over this weekend, they're going to pull it off. They're going to pull off the miracle, and this is something we've never seen in Major League Baseball, a team make up more than a 15-game deficit in a season to win a division. So that's just how I feel. How do you feel it will shake out in the Central in the end?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like, I'm curious to see what happens on Sunday if it gets to that point with Skubal, what the Tigers do with him. They have him in, their back pocket for some high leverage, either high leverage starts or high leverage relief if the game, it's almost going to be, well, it's going to be October baseball in September for them if it gets to that point where they need that win. But yeah, it's just fascinating on a number of levels. I think what makes it like especially crazy is that the Tigers were in the opposite position last year of just like, how are they winning games? They traded away at the they sold at the deadline. They have like two starters and are making it up as they go along. How do they keep winning games? How are they getting into a wild card spot? And now with the same manager and most of the same talent there and, you know, adding at the deadline, it's completely backfired on them. So what do you make of that? What do you make of AJ Hinch's acumen? What do you make of Scott Harris's acumen? What do you make? Like, just like, it's amazing how 1 month is basically undone everything you thought about a team over the previous like six baseball months. So they're going to have a fascinating offseason if they fall through. I think the Guardians can outlast them just because I don't know how the Guardians keep winning. And I mean, I generally know in the sense that like it's, you never know how they win every year. Basically good defense and just, it's the bullpen. It's great relief work. You just don't, this time around with Class A out, because of the gambling investigation, you just don't know who's going to be doing it. Or you didn't know the names of the guys who are going to be getting the highest leverage outings, but they're great at doing it. Even though Stephen Vogt is now in Terry Francona's place. So yeah, I think they're going to do it, although I've had like the wrong read on every single division the whole year. So don't feel necessarily confident about it. But I do want to see the Guardians pull it off just to finish the job. I you know, my attitude for September, especially like when you have this expanded postseason where, yeah, I guess my thinking on the postseason is that like Major League Baseball should decide how many teams deserve to get in the postseason every year. Like, don't say six. Like, maybe some years it's six, maybe some years it's four. They just say like, no, you didn't do it. Kind of have a like Olympic judging round to September of just, no, we're giving you a 6.5 and you needed a an 8 to get in. So, you know, better luck next year, because it's like the, you know, Blue Jays playing fine, Yankees playing great, Mariners playing great. Yes. Yeah. After that, like, kind of blah. Yeah, I guess the Red Sox. So I put the Red Sox in that list of like Red Sox, genuinely interesting. Everybody else, I don't necessarily want to see in October. So like that's, yeah. And then nationally, kind of the same thing, especially with that last spot in the wild card race. The fact that, you know, the Diamondbacks are still in, the Reds are still in, like, no, like just slash that spot. Just have five teams in the National League. Like that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, for the final weekend, Cleveland's at home against the Texas Rangers. Not an easy series for the Guardians, but Detroit is at Boston. And that's what makes game 162 so interesting in the American League, James, because for Detroit, they're not only scoreboard watching what is going on in Cleveland, but if the season were to end today, the Houston Astros would not be making the postseason. They are a game back of both Detroit and Cleveland in the standings. There is the possibility that Detroit goes from having a 15.5 game lead in the American League Central to not making the postseason altogether if Houston leapfrogs Detroit, as the Astros are heading to Anaheim to face the Angels. Jim just mentioned it. I know this is going to be a hot topic going into the weekend, but if Detroit and Houston are tied going to game 162, Skubal has to pitch, right? You can't save him for game one.
Probably.
I just think it'd be too risky. Like, for me, it'd be automatic. We got to get into playoffs.
Well, if he didn't, you know, people who are considering him versus like Crochet, that might be like something to factor, because Crochet is like ahead on innings and by like around 10. So Skubal could really like close the only like gap of advantage by pitching. That's probably not the way what Detroit should bank on. I just think like that Houston team is, I don't know, like they've taken so many hits. Like the logic that we are operating on, that they have any chance to kind of hang on this, is like anti-logic, where it's just like, oh, well, they're inevitable. So like, it's going to happen some way. It's like Jeremy Pena has a strain to Blake, Yordan Alvarez is out. Who knows when Luis Garcia is ever pitching again. Jose Altuve is not like that good anymore. That seems like a big problem for him to work through. They don't have Josh Hader. Like they don't have Bennett Souza. Like how can they pull this out? The Isaac Paredes came back and is like deeply compromised from the hamstring injury. Like they don't really have anything in place anymore. So I keep thinking like as bad as things have gotten with the Tigers and as much as AJ Hinch's quotes are increasingly like man, like general who realizes the last evacuation helicopter has left type of vibes to them. I feel like probably the Astros are entering a level of like just damage where they're not going to be able to sustain anything. And Rangers talent wise are a difficult series for the Guardians, but that's a team that's the kind of just has really had it official that they're out of it. You kind of wonder how much they're really going to muster for the final series. And we're doubling back to the conversation on why the Sox look spent. Not that I think anyone would advise Mike Tauchman to plan on. I mean, this is just terror, but given the way he's kind of soldiered through things this season, I think the Sox have a couple calculations as far as nagging injuries, where it's a bit more like if we had anything to play for at all, maybe they tough it out. But like, there's really just no purpose to having these banged up guys soldier through, and you see the performance kind of wane. I think it can happen for other teams too, especially teams that kind of just fell out of the race and like, all right, we've been pushing. Corey Seager, not, I think he's out for the appendicitis still, but any random like regular through this, but like now that it's really done, I think you're going to see, especially the last day, a lot of teams that don't have things to play for not put out like their best punch. Not that it necessarily dictates it means they automatically lose, but some of the series that scan as hard or difficult kind of get thrown into the blender a little bit in the final week where you don't know how teams are entering a final weekend.
Yeah, the Astros drawing the Angels, I think, is their last hope.
It's funny
At the
to
same time,
look at
like
the
that's a series the Angels might actually like give a crap about because it's interdivision to some degree, where it could be a small bit of a trap.
It'd be funny if the Angels play spoiler and it's the Angels that knock out the Astros to make it the postseason. But right now, the Astros wouldn't even be in the playoffs. So that's how the final weekend's going to go in the American League. Toronto is at home against Tampa Bay. New York is at home against Baltimore. That can go down to tiebreakers as well. And who wins the American League East or who ends up being the number four seed and host the first wild card series. And that's probably going to be against your division foe, the Boston Red Sox. So that's like the Yankees catching the Blue Jays is a big surprise, but we talked about that in previous podcast episodes that the Yankees have one of the easiest schedules in Major League Baseball to finish the season, and it's playing out that way. So, really captivating stuff. Tons of scoreboard watching going on in Toronto and in the Bronx and in Cleveland and in Boston and in Anaheim this weekend for the American League. Boy, that Boston Red Sox Detroit Tigers series is huge because the Red Sox have yet to clinch a playoff spot as well.
Does the league regret not having game 163s?
I don't know.
It'd be
It's a good question.
scheduling hell, but in terms of like just all of this is culminating for like, yeah, the Tigers and Guardians having game 163 would be incredible theater. Like the Blue Jays and Yankees having it would be awesome. They seem to go about like wanting to script this kind of, when they had that, what year is it where they had like the four, or like, yeah, or was it that? I'm trying to think
Oh
what year
yeah,
that
the
was. Like,
2011 finish with Longoria, you mean?
yeah, or they had like and just had like two games going on at the same, and like last week came down to their thing, their two game 163s, and then they tried to like alter the wild card game to be like one and done to where like, we want to manufacture the kind of tiebreaker energy every year. And then people realize like, oh, that's kind of a weird way to handle a wild card. But like, this is the kind of year where it's just, it's setting up for like 163 would be the perfect way to cap it. And
I imagine it's easier to sell a one game playoff or a wild card round when you know exactly when it's going to be, as opposed to negotiate a deal for when there are 163. So, and since, cable revenue is all that matters and the good of the sport is something for penniless liberal arts majors to debate on their podcast, I don't think that they really feel a lot of regret about it. They don't have the correct
yeah,
reaction to anything that happened, so why would they?
exactly. Fair enough.
Well, game 163s would have to be on Monday, which would compete against Monday Night Football for ESPN. So those games would have to be on Fox Sports or Turner.
And that's the only way you measure it is against NFL ratings. That's a very healthy attitude for baseball to have.
Yep. Well, yeah. That's how Rob Manfred's looking at it these days.
How can everything be the NFL? Apply it to literally every corner, every inch of society, I think. General approach.
Moving over to the National League, a lot more is settled over in the National League. The Brewers, the Phillies, the Dodgers have won their respective divisions. The Phillies can catch the Brewers for best overall record and to host home field advantage in the National League, but they got a sweep and they need the Brewers to be swept in order for that to happen. The Cubs still have a pretty decent lead over the San Diego Padres. They have a 2-game lead to host that first round. It's looking very likely that it's going to be Padres at Cubs for that wild card series. But for the Dodgers, being the number 3 seed, they're waiting to see on who they're going to be playing. The Mets did beat the Cubs on Thursday night. They are 82-77. They're 1 game ahead of Cincinnati, and they're 2 games ahead of Arizona. For the final series of the season, the Mets are traveling to Miami, who I can't believe they just got eliminated in the postseason. They've been alive for so long, and they're having a terrific season, especially bouncing back from 100 losses last year. Cincinnati's at Milwaukee, and Arizona is at San Diego. San Diego's still playing for something. Milwaukee, not so much, Jim. It feels like if the Mets don't take care of business in Miami, as we've talked about in a couple of podcasts ago, boy, this offseason is going to be very loud in Queens. And what in the world happened to the Mets, and what are they going to do this upcoming offseason to prevent a collapse like this of not making the postseason? Jim, how are you feeling about Cincinnati and Arizona's chances of catching the Mets and overtaking them to earn that final playoff spot?
He doesn't think it should be allowed.
Yeah, exactly.
There's going to be.
Yeah. No, there's a line that often comes to mind. Like there's a from Roger Ebert's review of The Usual Suspects. He's one of the few critics who panned the movie, and he watched it twice. And the second time he said, to the extent that I understand, I don't care. And that comes up a lot. Like when it's too much effort to try to make sense of something, like there comes a point where like I'm out. And when it comes to the last wild card spot in the National League, like I give up. Like none of these teams are, yeah, you know, I think the scale of the Mets failure is kind of interesting, but it's also played out over such a long stretch that I'm kind of tired of it already. And you know, they're responsible to just be spending more, and like it's rich people problems. But when you spend your entire season writing and podcasting about poor people problems, like rich people problems aren't that interesting. Or like, we'll take them just for something else, for the change of scenery. So yeah, it's the Reds. You know, I like them generally. I think baseball's more interesting when like Cincinnati's healthy. Like it, you know, it's one of those longstanding MLB markets when they're like Pirates bad. It's kind of depressing in a way that the Pirates being Pirates bad isn't. Like Pirates bad is a given. The Reds are feisty enough here and there that when they're making waves, cool, neat. Hope they make a run. Versus if they're like losing 96 games, they just prove everything about small markets and how baseball needs a salary cap and all that. So I guess I'm hoping for them, but like, yeah, just none of these teams really compel me. And you know, like the Diamondbacks, especially, like weren't trying. They gave up on it. So like, it's you know, when you see like the Tigers throw in the towel or trade guys or the Guardians trade guys and then get in the postseason, like it's a neat feat, but also I don't think it's necessarily healthy that the competition is so watered down that you can accidentally make in the postseason. At least one team can accidentally make in the postseason on a regular basis, if not like multiple.
So between the Mets, Reds, and Diamondbacks, I don't know, James, do you feel like any of these teams can knock off the Dodgers? I feel like whoever gets this spot, congratulations, you're going to get crushed in LA. Like, that's your reward.
Au contraire, the Dodgers are closing games with, like...
Oh, that's right.
Lots of different people. They're
having huge bullpen issues.
I think, if anything, you're at the risk of, like, a basically very 500 team jumping on some Dodger chaos and knocking out like a team that, at least certainly like their offensive core has the talent to win the World Series. And you have this, fraudulent Reds team like mucking around the NLDS and wasting our time. So that situation, it's like the classic thing with like the NCAA tournament. We're all thrilled to like to see all these upsets, and then we find ourselves watching like a 12 versus 13 game in the Sweet 16. You're like, maybe we went too far with this level of chaos. So I think it's kind of like the risk of having this expanded playoffs where, like, yeah, you could have like a really a thoroughly sixth best team in the league on national television a lot. Joe Buck calling it a Nick Martinez start or whatever, like kind of chaos, like is going to result from all of this. I think that's the bigger risk than kind of a lifeless wild card series. If anything, that's a dream to clear out the chaff as soon as possible. That's the more sensible way to go about it. Like, if I was a henchman in Kaiser Soze's crew, I'd probably just be muttering myself about why we can't just bump the witnesses off and bribe the cops like normal people and have to do this elaborate plot all the time. If we could just cut to the chase and have like the real teams compete, that'd be nice. But instead, we had to chase playoff revenues for a field that's deeper than it is interesting.
Thinking about the Reds, if the Reds can make it and knock off the Dodgers, I mean,
They couldn't score a run off Johan Ramirez like the other night for their season on the line. I don't want to see them ever again. The guy will just hit four batters in a row if you let him. Like, get out of here.
this is what I'm talking about. If the Reds can make
See,
it.
the game shouldn't be played. Like, this spot should be eliminated. Five team field in the National League.
One game playoff, go old school. One game playoff at Wrigley Field between the Padres and Cubs.
Sure.
Okay.
Like that's good programming.
Yeah. I thought at the beginning of the season that the best teams were in the National League and the American League postseason would just be chaotic because it was hard to like really figure out who were the strong teams. And I think it's going to be a great postseason. We'll preview it when we do find out who is all going to be making the postseason field for Major League Baseball. But I'm loving these projected matchups. Like Padres Cubs, that's going to be fun. Mets Dodgers would be kind of fun storyline wise. But you can have Padres or Cubs against the Milwaukee Brewers. You could have a Dodgers and Phillies series, but like Boston and New York right away. You could have another series this month between Detroit and Cleveland. I'm really looking forward to the postseason. I can't wait to see it how it shakes out in the final weekend of the season. I know it's football season. A lot of people would be watching college and the NFL, but definitely keep one of your other monitors or other streaming devices on the Major League Baseball games because these are fantastic races going to the final game of the regular season. And that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can listen to this show and watch our videos. Like I mentioned, we're going to have more videos coming to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. Again, we are sending James out to Washington, D.C. You can follow him on social media at JR Fegan. You can follow us at Sox Machine. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We're on Instagram. So if you do have Instagram, give us a follow. We appreciate that. Putting a lot of effort right now to try to build up that account. And making, interesting content to make it worthwhile. So if you are on Instagram, please give Sox Machine a follow at Sox Machine. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, especially with the offseason coming up, really could use your guys' support to keep the lights on and get ready for the 2026 season. Sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. We do have annual discounts as well. That gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and website and access to their comment section. And again, what better way if you are not a subscriber to subscribe to Sox Machine so you can get ready to play the role as general manager and participate in the offseason plan projects. Again, if you are interested, go to SoxMachine.com and sign up today. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.